Please be seated. I want to apologize for leaving you waiting and for the court being late, but I take full responsibility. I had another court matter that had to be handled, and it just took a little longer than I had expected. We welcome you here this afternoon, and I call our first day of meeting in the new year. And I call our third case for today, 08AP3182, Steve Ottman versus Town of Primrose. Arguing on behalf of the Ottmans is attorney John Varda. Mr. Varda, you may proceed.
Your Honor, Chief Justice, Honorable Justices of the Court, I am John Duncan Varda, a member of the bar of this court, representing petitioners Steve and Sue Ottman in the front row. My co-counsel is Nancy Varda, who is also a member of the bar of this court. As well as trying to answer questions you may have, I would like to provide some summary background about the Ottman's family farm and how we came to be here today. I'd like to make a couple of comments, brief comments, on how we disagree with the amicus briefs. And I would like to address the primary issue on which the court granted review, the rule of deference and the scope of certiorari review in matters relating to regulation of the use of land. Several years ago, Steve Ottman retired from serving over 27 years as a Verona police officer. After some years working as a legal secretary early on, Sue Ottman left full-time employment outside the home to raise their four children, working outside the home part-time as a crossing guard, and as a teacher's aide for handicapped students in the Mount Horeb School District. Over the years, they worked in several small businesses of their own, among them growing and retail sale of Christmas trees. Steve started in the business in childhood with his father and brother. For over 25 years, they have been in the Christmas tree business. They now operate retail sales lots in Verona and Milwaukee, as well as grow trees in Primrose. In 2001, with Steve's retirement on the horizon and children ready to help, they leased and then in 2002 purchased 47 acres in the town of Primrose to grow Christmas trees at home. They invested $80,000 or more in an ag building and equipment and began planting Christmas trees. Christmas tree sales at the Ottman family farm began November 26, 2010. 18 acres of trees planted in stages with annual replantings, provide a sustainable crop of choose and cut your own Christmas trees year to year into the future. But for pro bono representation, the court likely would not be hearing from the Ottmans today. Most anyone starting up a family farm is unlikely to have resources to commit to contesting zoning decisions of a town board, to say nothing of three levels of appeal. Pro bono representation is not an incidental circumstance. It is a key part of the context in which this appeal comes before the court.
One of the things I noted, Attorney Varda, is my understanding that at the same day that the application was filed here in 2001, that you were part of a group that also filed an application for a permit for a driveway. Were you representing yourself then, since you talk about pro bono?
For clarification, six applications for driveway and other permits were filed on September 3 of 2004.
Okay.
And we responded to the requirements of the ordinances in each of those. After several hearings and discussions with the town, each of those applications proceeded on their own in succession to be heard. The Ottmans was one of the first.
Can I just, while you're being interrupted, you know, sometimes we have pro se litigants. In fact, a lot of times in criminal cases, we have pro se litigants that file matters, especially petitions for review. But one of the issues always comes up is, should you treat a pro se non-lawyer differently than a lawyer? And you're stressing pro bono. Should we treat a pro bono lawyer differently than we treat a paid counsel? Because we also hire, in quotes, pro bono lawyers, too, in criminal cases where they aren't entitled to lawyers, and the court needs counsel if the client is willing to take counsel to present the case. Well, and I tell you, we don't treat them any better. They lose as much as any other lawyers, or they win as much as any other lawyers, and we don't give them special dispensation at oral arguments. So why are you telling us all this?
I'm telling you that because it's very unlikely for a case in this type of situation, a startup farm operation, to be able to pay lawyers to contest their case. I'm not suggesting we should treat them any differently, although this client in its land use case has the bad luck of ending up with a transportation lawyer, but a new student of
Well, but
land
now
use
maybe
law.
We'll take pro bono in transportation, Mr. Varda.
do that quite often.
May I ask you a question about zoning? Because that interests me in this case. Now, your position is that the town has engaged in zoning, right?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Give me examples. Help me put in my mind what kinds of things a town can do and regulate, and what kinds of things qualify as zoning. If regulating this particular situation is zoning, what can this town board do that's subject to the kind of review they suggest they should have?
Would it be that there could be a bright line? I don't suppose there ever
will
be.
Give me examples. If you can't
But an example would be, as in this case, zoning is a direct regulation of the use of land. And as we said in our briefs, if the Ottmans come to their farm, commute to their farm to do their farming, and their driveway is used for agricultural purposes only, it's a field road, and it's acceptable. It's not even regulated beyond the right-of-way of the public road. However, if they choose or desire to have a farmhouse on their farm, then it is a driveway which requires a residential driveway permit. So the distinction is that's a direct and clear regulation of land use. It's different from storms and Clearfield, where a town is, in general and prospectively, regulating what connections you have for mobile home sewage, where the town's purpose is to regulate sewage, health and welfare of the community, and equate deal with the mobile home in a way in which they also deal with other types of buildings and facilities. That is not in our view, a regulation, in the court's view, a regulation of the use of land.
Counsel, I have neither an expertise in transportation nor in zoning, so I sometimes go to the treatises on a particular issue that we have before us, and the definition of zoning, in fact, the first sentence in the McQuillan Corporation's book with regard to zoning, the very first sentence on page, it's 8, defines zoning with regard to a division into separate districts. The first sentence says this: zoning is the legislative division of a region, most commonly a city, into separate districts with different regulations within the district for land use, building size, etc. That's the first sentence. The zoning law and practice, the Yokley treatise, has the zoning defined. One question to be properly discussed is, what is zoning? Well, that's a nice way to start out a book on zoning. And it also incorporates in its definition the development of property, a municipality, or a large part of it, by dividing it into districts according to the present and potential use of the properties. That's chapter 2, page 1. So we don't have that here, that classical definition of zoning, of some kind of,
no, Your Honor,
kind of dividing within districts.
No, Your Honor, what you have here is the exercise of the zoning power as defined by the legislature in 6223, in 7 and 6, the scope of the zoning power, which involves, you know, many things other than districts or zones. We also pointed out to the court that if you look at how this began with farmland preservation, the first land use plan in the town of Primrose, in effect, said we're going to have one big district because we're an agricultural community. Now, there was some other zoning, but Ag 1 exclusive zoning came at that point in the form of maps, you know, laying out the district and the minor parcels that were not. Today, following that pass in the latest iteration of the land use plan in the form of a comprehensive plan adopted by the county and incorporated in its master plan, the town has three different districts: an agricultural district, a environmental preservation district, we call it environmental corridors, and public lands.
At the time relevant to this case, was it also divided into those areas?
Yes, it was divided into agricultural land and some limited commercial and other properties. It is an agricultural community. There was one large, very large district, and some other minor districts, and those are defined and outlined in the land use plan from 1985 forward.
I have just a simple question. Where are you in your three issues? We're not talking about deference now. Are you?
Excuse me, Your Honor, I missed that.
Are you talking about deference? I want to know where we are in your three issues.
Well, I didn't get past this commenting on the amicus briefs.
That's
right. Would you like me to address?
I think that's the third issue, regulation, use of law, amicus brief, where you have a difference, isn't it? I mean, all this conversation about whether this is zoning, doesn't it go to the third issue? Does it go to the first issue? Where does it go?
I think it gets to what is the standard, the scope of certiorari review.
Well, and that's why you ask in your brief that it be treated by zoning, and then you say that in 62 you've got a different scope of review. But I don't read in your briefs that you're challenging that this is a zoning ordinance that wasn't adopted in accordance with the procedures of a zoning ordinance, and the amicus brief does.
Exactly.
Thank you.
We do not. The amicus briefs say the ordinances, the driveway and building permit ordinances, our zoning. And we say, yes, we agree with that as to the agricultural productivity provisions of those ordinances. Only the agricultural productivity provisions. The amicus briefs go on to suggest that the town's ordinances are void for lack of approval by the county.
Are you willing to say
it's
that?
It's an interesting argument. We do not agree with it.
Oh. You're just on scope of review.
That's correct, Your Honor. The town, right, as it makes clear in its response brief, sees itself acting in concert with the county in regulating the use of land. The county, in turn, has repeatedly approved the town's land use plans, and now its comprehensive plan with the multiple districts. They are incorporated in the county's master plan. They are also the basis for the agricultural productivity provisions of the town's driveway and building ordinances.
Agricultural productivity. Are you talking about capability of earning, what, $6,000, $10,000? Is that what we're talking about?
We're talking about the two specific provisions, the numbers escape me, in the driveway ordinances,
six
which are headed agricultural
six
productivity.
Okay. That's capability of earning, is that
capability
the one?
Of earning is one element of the definition in the driveway ordinance and in the building permit ordinance.
What's the other than the capability of earning?
Actually, when you look at the agricultural productivity provisions, mm-hmm, they were intended to restrain the exercise of denial of driveways,
right,
the first element being, is the driveway going to enhance the productivity?
Right. That's the second one. But good.
And
okay.
Then the next is...
It's not really as enhance, isn't it, that what's the least
enhancement.
Pardon me?
We call it enhancement. If it's,
but the language doesn't use enhancement, does it?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either, and I'm sorry I can't pick it up.
Excuse me, Mr. Varda.
Quickly enough.
It may be helpful if you would start out simply by recounting what it is exactly your clients are being prevented from doing and how that is an exercise of zoning as opposed to a more permissible exercise of municipal authority.
The Ottmans built their ag building. They built a field road. The town approved the field road.
They did build the field road.
And
what is the field road exactly?
The field road is the near equivalent of a residential driveway. It's 20 feet wide. It goes up the hill.
What is it covered in width?
It's a graveled road, and it's pictured in the applicant's appendix at page 115.
So there is a field road there presently, but they sought what?
They asked, and the field road is limited to agricultural use only. What we asked for was, and the jurisdiction of the town over that road under the ordinance is limited to the portion of the field road which is in the public right-of-way. The rest of the field road, the town does not regulate. Our application is to put a building, a residential building, adjacent to the ag building, and to use that field road as a residential driveway. And that's the only difference. Now, the ordinance has some specific provisions for residential driveway, and that was being addressed in phase two of this application. In the preliminary application, what we addressed and what the town addressed was the agricultural productivity provisions of the driveway and building permit ordinances. So the only difference here in terms of the driveway is that we're going to use the driveway to access a farmhouse as opposed to using the driveway only to access the agricultural buildings and the farm for agricultural purposes.
Council, Your opposing counsel in brief said, but there are more differences than that based on the findings of the town as a result of the hearing. If I recall correctly, those differences include potential difference in slope, excavations necessary on both sides of, I'm not saying this is accurate, this is my recollection. They said that they made findings that it would be different from a driveway vis-a-vis a town road in that you would have to have excavations on both sides of the road. The slope would be different. Where it meets the highway, there has to be a certain elevation. And so they made it sound as though these the intrusion on the land is different.
And, in fact,
that's what they found, apparently.
The excavations they were talking about, and they reference in their draft decision in January, when the final decision was not out until September, they say those excavations are necessary whether it's a field road or whether it's a residential driveway, because the field road within the public right-of-way must meet the same requirements of a residential driveway or such other requirements as the town chooses to, if it chooses lesser requirements. But in terms of meeting the ordinance,
the highway.
And that would be the portion of the driveway that is in the public right-of-way. So in terms of findings, what is a finding of fact? And I love this, the town's finding. They have a finding that says, the farm is not capable of producing $6,000 per year. Is that a finding of fact?
What does capable of producing mean to you? Capable today, capable tomorrow, capable someday?
That's the difference. What the town said and what it added to that finding is they excluded all evidence of other than evidence of past production. So evidence of potential production, soil type, other aspects that were presented in the record are not considered. They also added a hidden condition, and that is that the labor of the applicant produce the $10,000. It's nowhere in the ordinance.
Well, that's an interesting point that you bring up, Counselor, because I was going to ask it to you later on, and I'll bring it up now. Nobody talks about the income they must have gotten from the farmer who cropped, about 20 acres out of the 40 in the past while they were planting trees and converting this property. Was that never presented?
That was presented, and it's in the appendices, and it's
Where in the appendices, Council? Because I was looking for that, too. I saw how much the farmer made per bushel, but I didn't see what he paid your client.
That's the real challenge.
And which is the test? What
it's
the farmer
made?
The
testimony of Mr. Hanna, who is the crop tenant, and it's on page AA129. And it's interesting because what I say is the hidden condition is they are not looking at what the crop tenant produced. Why? Because the hidden condition is we say it has to be by the labor of the applicant.
But I'm sorry, Mr. Varda. It seemed to me from the limited amount I could read in the record, which is in the appendix, what you had is how much the tenant made from the farm, from the corn.
Yes.
But that isn't what your client got. So who what is it that you measure in pay per bill?
The client gets the rent.
Pardon me?
The client gets the rent.
I know. How much rent did he get?
But if it's less.
That's what I thought.
Small token. But
small amount, less than 6,000? Or is that not the record?
Less than 6,000, okay. Yes, Your Honor. But right. If the standard is capable of producing, what does capable mean?
Now we get to your first issue. Namely, the town board interpreted its ordinance, right?
That's right.
It drafted it, it enacted it, it interpreted it. So do we say as a court that we should give deference to the town board in its interpretation? Now, when you give, first of all, it's a question of law, so that's for the judiciary. But there's a concept that sometimes the judiciary will say, oh, well, if you did a reasonable interpretation, town board, we'll take it, even though there may be six different reasonable interpretations. Yours is reasonable. It's good enough. It's your ordinance. Now, how do you want this court to interpret a town ordinance? Don't pay any attention to the town at all. What the town did, and if it's reasonable, okay.
We're looking for a differentiation in what deference is given depending upon what the nature of the issue is. So when we look at this supposed finding of fact, the farm is not capable of producing $6,000, we'd like recognition that that's not a finding of fact. That's at least mixed fact and law, if not a legal determination. And we think the legal determination deserves no deference in this case. There is no history of how it was interpreted. The town, in fact, changed its interpretation to address this case. There was no other history of that.
Well, that's your first issue on deference. Your second issue is, if I can hold you for a moment, is because we've somewhat dealt with the issue on zoning, where you're not attacking it as zoning, you want a different standard of review. As I read your brief, although you recognize the limited argument on cert and the things that we review, you finally, I think, in your brief say, is a broad enough standard under cert to handle this case? And if I can, I may not be able to find my notes quickly enough, but I will by the time you come back, here it is. Ottman ultimately says in a section header, the customary standards for certiorari review are flexible enough to assure adequate review, provided that the analysis is not pro forma, but a conscientious questioning of the basis for deference. So I read that to say you can get all of what you want under cert. It's just that the court isn't really doing it. Did I read it right?
You are reading that, Your Honor, correctly. Our position is the presumption of correctness and validity. It's a soundbite. It doesn't say anything. It sends the wrong message. The message needs to be balanced. When we say any reasonable view of the record will support the Downs decision, we need to say immediately thereafter, have an instruction that says that the basis of decision must be rational, it must be reasonable, and in land use, the burden imposed may not be out of all proportion to the reason, the public purpose, that the restriction is intended to effect.
Thank you,
that is balance.
Mr. Reynolds, representing the town of Primrose.
Thank you, Your Honor. Members of the court, my name is Glenn Reynolds. I represent the town of Primrose. And let me just say that the town has, for now decades, adopted and grappled with exclusive agricultural zoning. This is a statutory scheme set up by the legislature to preserve farmland. Primrose didn't invent it. Dane County adopted a zoning ordinance, basically incorporating these state standards of what is and what is not exclusive agricultural zoning.
Does that Dane County ordinance have a dollar figure, income producing figure?
Yes, it does.
And what is that?
It's currently 10,000 $500. At the time of this action, it was $10,400 for 3 consecutive years.
Tell me how you think the town then can decide it's $6,000.
The town's $6,000 figure, Justice, came from the original farmland preservation guidance of $6,000, a minimum lot size of 35 acres and $6,000 per year to constitute a farm. So these are state standards that then move down to the county, and the county had a $6,000 per year requirement. And so the town just adopted that as a means of saying that we are in partnership with this grand statutory scheme to preserve agricultural land. It wasn't that the town was drawing a bright line. It was just saying, we agree with it. We're adopting the state and the county standards. So the importance of exclusive agricultural zoning, as found in chapter 91, it has now been changed. But at the time, it basically said if a town wants to adopt exclusive agricultural zoning, it may. The county ordinance, though, sort of is the umbrella under which it operates.
I'm sorry, I'm still stuck on this capable thing. When the county interprets its $10,000 requirement, do they require that that's what it has to be in the past, the present, the future? How's that work? Help me out. I don't know.
Yes, Your Honor. The town board was very careful in its findings, wanted to make sure that it understood the county requirements. And actually, at the hearing it was given under Chapter 68, the zoning administrator testified that the county, Dane County, interprets its ordinance of $10,400 per year for 3 consecutive years to be actual income, money in the bank. And so the town's interpretation of capable of producing, which must be read in context with other ordinances and statutes that apply, interpreted capable of producing now, this year, only 1 year, not 3 consecutive years. But if Mr. Varda's interpretation of capable of producing would be found to be the law in this instance, it would mean that anyone with a 40-acre parcel would be able to come up with a plan, as happened before the town adopted its ordinances, would come up with a plan of selling prairie seeds, for instance, and could easily make an argument that 40-acre parcel could produce or was capable of producing more than $6,000 a year, and then ask the county to give them a house on top of the hill.
Does the county ordinance use the word capable of producing, or does it just say produces?
It does not, Justice Ruckinsack, use capable of producing. That is a word that is actually in the definition of agricultural land, and the town's intent was not to discourage farming. The town of Primrose welcomes Mr. Ottman. But the fact is that, when they were asked to give a driveway, it wasn't a temporary field road anymore. It was a permanent fixture on the land, a division of the land. And they were not about to give Mr. and Mrs. Ottman a residential driveway, which implied all kinds of changes in the landscape, unless he was going to be able to get a house. And it wasn't up to the town to decide whether he would get a house. It was up to the county. And the county still has not given Mr. Ottman a house because he has not made that income requirement. Now, if, and as Mr. Varda says, he is able to meet that requirement, then the county will give him a zoning permit for a farmhouse, and the town will give him a driveway. It's simple.
You're confusing me a little bit with things I hadn't actually thought about till you started answering Justice Ziegler's questions about Dane County. So if his Christmas tree farm this year gives him $6,000, and you add to that whatever he gets from the farmer who's cropping on his land, he's got enough money just to meet, say he makes $6,500. So now the town's going to give him a permit to build his driveway. But if the county has a $10,400 limit on what he can do, I don't quite see how they fit together.
Well, they fit together because the house and the driveway go hand in hand. When a house is built in the town of Primrose, it's not just a it is a change in use of the land, and it's a farmer who owns 40 acres doesn't have a guaranteed right to build a house. This is from Farmland Preservation. It says you can't use farmland to put non-farm improvements. So the county defines a farmhouse as a house that corresponds with the use of land that generates that income. So if a house is built there, the town has an obligation to make sure that there's safety considerations, that fire and emergency vehicles can get up the driveway, that that the town has the obligation of making sure that there is protection of fire and water for individuals.
We're on a different page, Counselor.
Okay.
What I want to know is very simple. Okay, if he meets the $6,000 requirement of income, whether it's from his Christmas tree farm or whatever, and he applies tomorrow for a permit to a driveway, you're telling me he's going to get the permit. And once he gets the driveway permit and has built his driveway, then you're telling me that he's going to get a building permit from the county to build his house. Am I correct?
No, that's incorrect.
Okay, and that's why I'm off
track. Okay,
I'm
sorry.
Tell me, straighten me out, would you?
Because the county has the ultimate zoning power, and they have the power to say, all right, you can build a house out there on the farm, because we're satisfied that it is a farmhouse, not just a residential house.
So right, but he's not going to meet the $10,400. I mean, here, the town is saying if you don't have $6,000, you cannot have a permit for a driveway. He is not going to have $10,000 in my hypothetical. He's going to have six.
That's right.
Okay, so how is he ever going to satisfy the county if their requirement is the same and get a house based on $6,000 of income?
He's going to have to establish with the county the current substantial income requirement, and that will be way past 2010.
Okay, so he can get a driveway for $6,000, but he can't get a house till he makes $10,004?
That's right.
For 3 years.
So he's going to have a driveway to nowhere?
Yes, you know, theoretically. And that is an inconsistency in the previous ordinance. The current ordinance, which Mr. Varda has provided for you in his appendix, makes a consistent $10,500 requirement,
okay. But
not for 3 years. So the town wanted to be careful. The town doesn't have the power to make a more restrictive condition. So they're pretty much waiting for Mr. Ottman to meet the county requirements so he can have a house, and then he'll have a driveway.
Okay, but even
makes
even
enough
if,
money.
Even if he had enough money today and reapplied, because he can reapply tomorrow.
That's right.
He still is not going to be able to build his house.
That's correct.
Okay, thank
That's
you.
Correct.
I just didn't understand that.
Counsel, your opposing counsel ended his argument with essentially saying on this point that, look, we have the traditional review in writs of certiorari. Did they act outside of their jurisdiction? Did they act arbitrary and capriciously? But it's amounted to a rubber stamp. It's not a meaningful review. And he talked about a couple of things in making it a more meaningful review. He says the presumption of correctness is a soundbite, which means not a meaningful review. It doesn't say anything. And then he suggested that it must be rational, it must be reasonable, and a couple of other suggestions. How can you disagree with that?
Well, I would say this, Justice Bradley, that the presumption of a correctness, Mr. Varda uses the adjective blanket. It's just a matter of shifting the burden of proof so that there is separation of powers between the judiciary and the legislative branches. And what this long line of cases that establishes certiorari it basically says to Mr. Varda, show us where the municipality was wrong. Otherwise, the municipality, every time they were sued for something, when they said no, would always be defending itself. So it's a burden shifting. And it doesn't at all limit the scope of judicial inquiry. In this particular case, What's unique about it, it wasn't just a town board and a denial. The town accorded administrative review, a very, you know, elaborate process where Mr. Varda and his clients were able to present evidence, they could cross-examine. They had, you know, even after the hearing, they had unlimited ability to supplement the record. They participated in the drafts of the decisions, which were all done in open meetings. And so when Judge Sumi reviewed the record, she had a very good factual understanding of what the issues were and was able to exercise her discretion to say that that there was plenty of that there was a substantial basis for the decision that was made. The one issue that, with respect to deference, is when do courts defer on questions of law as opposed to questions of fact? And that, I think, is an issue that this court could potentially clarify. In the Maris case, there was a decision because an ordinance was well distributed throughout the state that there would be de novo review and interpretation of what words meant within the ordinance. In this case, as far as I know, this is a unique ordinance that that basically tries to describe concepts of capable of producing that I think should warrant great deference to the town, because it's the town's land use plan in context with the county zoning ordinance in the context of farmland preservation. And it basically is less of a standard than the county requirement of 3 years of $10,500. And so I think the courts, the judiciary, should give deference to the town that has drafted this ordinance.
Tell me what you mean by deference. What I hear, which may not be what you want to say, is that deference means if it's reasonable, you'll bow to it. You'll accept it.
That's correct.
Even if you might be inclined to give a more reasonable.
That's correct.
Or different. Approach.
That's correct.
Is that what you mean?
It is, Justice Abramson. And the other important part of that deference is not just to look at the word in the ordinance, because it is ambiguous. What does capability mean? Is it capable ever, capable now, capable in the past? I mean, people can disagree on the meaning. But when that word is interpreted within the context of the county ordinance and farmland preservation, it's very clear that the policy is that a farmer gets to build a farmhouse when the farmer establishes that it's an economically viable operation.
Well, let's just ask a simple question about economically viable. Do we look at the owner's actual farming, which is trees, or do we look at whether the owner has been paid rent because the neighboring farmer is putting in the corn? Was it corn? As best I remember. Okay. So what is it?
Well, that's a great question, and actually, as these ordinances have evolved, the county has made a decision that rent income does not count, that it has to be on the labor of the individual that's making use of the land. And the current driveway ordinance incorporates the county decision not to include rent.
Where does it do that?
I'm sorry?
Where does it do that? Does the town specifically say they've incorporated the county?
I couldn't hear that.
I want to know. You say that the county says it has to be the farmer's labor.
That's right.
Owner of the land. And then you said the town has incorporated that doctrine, the county doctrine. I want to know where.
Okay. That sort of postdates the ordinances in this case, but it is in the Mr. Varda supplied the current renditions. But the current interpretation is that the whole idea is that if a farmer is going to live out there, it needs to be a creative use of the land. Otherwise, a person with 300 acres could always have an expensive farmhouse on top of the hill but wouldn't be a farmer.
That's right.
Counselor, I have to go back to my earlier questions because I'm still, unfortunately, a little bit confused by the building permit deal. I have the appendix, parts of it in front of me, and one of them is the building permit ordinance by the town, which appears to say that the town gives the building permit and it has a $6,000 capable of producing also. If I understood your answers to my question before, it was that the county gave the building permit, or are there two permits that are required before they can build?
Justice, there are actually two permits that are required. One is a zoning permit, the county calls it, which allows a residential use of a farm. That comes from the county with the requirement. And the
with
building,
the requirement of what?
I'm sorry?
With the requirement of what?
Income.
Okay, gotcha.
So that there's an establishment that the farm is viable.
Okay.
And the town building permit ordinance basically has the same income, you know, just to be in sync with the county, but also has it's not just a building code ordinance. It basically charges the town with the power of deciding location so that there can be minimal impacts on agricultural land.
Well, the one I have in front of me has $6,000 as the amount that the town can use, capable of producing $6,000. So I assume it was the one that was in place when the application was made, correct?
That's correct. And it's also consistent with a driveway ordinance that says that non-farm development is discouraged, which is a statutory sort of farmland preservation thing. But if it is farmland, then it needs to be an actual farm. So this isn't the town's bright line. This is the county and the state's bright line that the town merely adopts.
Okay, so you are saying that if they had been granted the driveway permit when they applied and they had been granted a building permit from the town, they still would not then at that point in time, dollar amount, have qualified to get the second permit they need to build a house from the county. Am I correct?
That's correct, Justice. There would be no house without substantial income. And that's in the record. That's Peter Conrad's testimony at the hearing.
All right. But thanks for helping me with that.
Okay.
Counsel, if I might, I'm just trying to, again, sort this out. There's the driveway ordinance that there's the county driveway ordinance, right? And at 1.10, it talks about no driveway should be approved, blah, blah, blah. It goes on. It's lengthy. And then it's I think, pretty clear. It says has produced an average gross income of $10,500 per year for the past 3 years. Okay? That's at 1.10, dealing with agricultural productivity and driveways, right?
Now, is this the 2010 ordinance,
yes.
Justice Ziegler? Okay.
Yeah, that's
That's not the ordinance that applies in this case.
Okay.
And that actually, I mean, but that is
well,
the...
Well, but that's the town of Primrose, Dane County driveway ordinance now, right?
That's right.
Okay. That's not the one that you're referring to that they had to comply with.
That's the one that Mr. Barta is challenging.
Is that the language? My point is that the language? Did they take the language from the Dane County ordinance and use it now for the town of Primrose and they didn't before?
Well, they did. The $6,000 was the county income requirement when they began a farmland preservation ordinance. And then the county upped it to $10,400 for 3 years. And now in 2010, the town has basically adopted the same language.
But when I look at 1.10, which is agricultural productivity, from the town of Primrose driveway ordinance back from 97, it does not have that 3 year has produced that language.
Right.
It has the capable of producing at least 6,000 of gross income per year. It does not have that same language that currently exists that apparently was in the county ordinance.
That's correct. That's
okay.
Correct.
But what I was trying to establish is, do your ordinances now conform to what the county requires?
Yes.
In other words, instead of me leaving and trying to find the county ordinance, is that the language that the county zoning ordinance has?
Yes, except that the county is more restrictive, requiring 3 years of income, where the town just requires 1 year.
That's why I asked you, because that's what it says in the current town of Primrose one. It says, has produced an average gross income of $10,500 per year for the past 3 years.
Yes, that's
correct.
That's
different than is capable of producing.
That's correct.
Okay.
Well, the bigger question is, can the town differ from the county?
The town, I don't believe, can be more restrictive than the county because the...
It can be less restrictive.
It can be less restrictive.
So it can say 6 grand, even though the county says 10.
I believe so, Justice.
What would the Atmans have to do to get a driveway if they started from scratch?
Well, that's a great question, Justice Prosser. I think the Atmans have plenty of options here. They can one option that was disclosed very early on is to sell nursery stock rather than wait for the Christmas trees to grow up and be cut. They could have sold nursery stock back in 2005 or 6 and began generating income to satisfy the county requirement. They can wait an additional 2 years and satisfy the county requirement. And then they could also ask the county to rezone the property for residential use. And the argument that the Atmans had been making all along is that, which took up so much of the town's time, is that this land was not, that it was too rocky, it didn't grow a crop. Well, that's the land that the town of Primrose says ought to be rezoned. The land that is least productive is the land that is appropriate to be rezoned, because the town plan recognizes that there will be some non-farming residences in the town, and that's all good for the tax base, and they welcome that. Their main goal, though, is to protect viable agricultural land. So Mr. Ottman could rezone the property. He could have raised sufficient funds, I think, to justify substantial income, or he can wait another few years or a year and ask the county to approve his farmhouse as a conditional use.
Did the farm make the requisite amount of income?
Is the farm making it now?
This year?
I have no idea.
You said wait another 2 years.
He may have to wait another 2 years. For my part, I did go to Mr. Ottman's farm to buy a Christmas tree this year, but it was closed. But I know he's open for business this year, and he was predicted that 2010 would be his first year of income.
My real question is, if the Ottmans met the requirement and got a permit for a house and did the driveway, would they have to stay in the farming business?
See, that is that's the central thing that Dane County has been struggling with, because if someone comes up with a farm plan and convinces the county to build a house, if they stop farming, the house then becomes a non-conforming use, an exclusive agricultural zoning. It's no longer a farmhouse because it's not being farmed, but there's no mechanism for raising the house. It's a prospective thing where the county has to be very careful before they approve a residential building site, because there are a lot of people who have all kinds of desires to build houses on top of the hill, but don't necessarily intend to farm, which is a very arduous occupation. So there is no mechanism, Justice Prosser, for raising a house, even though it's a non-conforming use. It's just one of those things, because of the property rights, of course, invested in somebody. There's no guarantee that Mr. Ottman's going to be a farmer after he gets his house.
When you talk about nursery stock, I'm a city boy. Are we talking about little tiny Christmas trees that will be grown somewhere else, or what are we talking about?
Well, we're talking about nurseries that grow trees that, you know, they're all balled up in roots like an old seed company or whatever, and the homeowner would want to plant a white pine or whatever and just dig a little hole, put it in, and let it grow up into a big tree. So it's just...
You find it at the farmer's market.
That's right, yeah. So it would just be selling young stock that people would put in their yards or wherever for...
Is that as remunerative as Christmas trees?
I cannot answer that question. I think it might be more remunerative. But it certainly was an option for Mr. Ottman to raise money at an early basis. rather than waiting for his Christmas trees to grow up. And that was his choice.
Well, he might not want to go to the farmer's market every
But I think the overall, in the overall scheme of things, the town of Primrose welcomes innovators like Mr. Ottman. The Wisconsin has a great history of farming, and Primrose is famous for one of its early farming residents. Robert Ruth Follett was born in the town of Primrose. It's an agricultural community that is vibrant. It's healthy. Two of the three town board members are farmers. They care about farming, and in a season where farming is in decline and the dairy state now struggles to keep its farm base, the town welcomes innovators like the Ottmans. But their hands are tied by the plans in place by farmland preservation, and the Ottmans will get a house when the county says it's time to get a house.
Council,
may I ask? Just for clarification, what's involved in this particular case about a driveway doesn't seem to me exactly what the issue is here. What is the larger issue in terms of deference and scope here? Why don't you characterize what Mr. Varda is seeking here?
Well, I think the larger issue that Mr. Varda misses is he argues for agency review and actually quotes your concurring opinion, or maybe it was a dissent, criticizing the lack of judicial oversight in agency decisions, which are not creatures of the electorate. The point missed, I think, and the reason for such deference to local decision-making is because the local political leaders are popularly elected by the people, and so they have a direct connection with the electorate. And so the judicial branch needs to give deference to the legislative branch and just make sure that the local entity is complying with the law. And the presumption of correctness merely requires that the applicants make a case for how they violated the law, how their theories were incorrect, or how their decisions were arbitrary and capricious, which is another way of saying that there was absolutely no evidence that supported the decision. If there is reasonable evidence that supports a decision, then I think the judiciary, unless it wants to get into the fact-finding that local political entities make, and especially in this case, which was literally an administrative tribunal that took a lot of care, then it needs to basically make sure that the local entity is complying with its legal parameters and respect its decision without second-guessing what that decision was. The Supreme Court has said over and over and over again that it will not allow judges to second-guess reasonable decisions made by popularly elected bodies.
Now, who made the decision here? The town board, which is popularly elected, or the planning commission?
It was the town board, okay. Your Honor.
So you're saying this is not an administrative agency case at all?
Well, the interesting thing is Chapter 68, which was to accord the Ottmans due process, is actually an administrative agency.
Well, then why isn't the level of deference thus? In an administrative agency, and we've got plenty of cases that talk about this, an administrative agency, when the agency is interpreting a state statute, then you have the three levels of deference. When an administrative agency is interpreting their own rules or regulations, we have what we call a level of deference that is controlling. There's a case, Daimler and Chrysler, that we discussed this in. And so there's a difference between when they're interpreting a state statute, when you have the three levels, and when it is their own administrative regulation. And we say when it's their own administrative regulation, then we give that their interpretation is controlling unless it's plainly erroneous, in other words, plainly unreasonable or inconsistent with the regulation. It seems to me that if this is a unique wording of a ordinance, it's more akin to an agency interpreting its own rule or regulation than an agency interpreting a state statute, which has the three levels of deference.
I think that's a fine distinction, because the town of Primrose is not interpreting state statutes, just their own regulation to affect priorities that have been set by the legislature and incorporated with the county. I mean, the town and the county are really partners in working on these very difficult issues of farmland preservation. The town is not acting alone, but I think your analysis would be a good way of looking at it.
I'm not sure. That's why I throw it out.
Well, and if you add to that concept that is in some of the opinions, not necessarily the majority, that you defer to elected officials, because if the people of the town don't like what the town board did, they can get them out.
That's right.
And it doesn't need the court. You just get a new town board and reapply.
Well, that's correct. Yeah, it is a democracy, and Wisconsin's unique in its town government, but I think it's a democracy at its best.
Or worse,
depending on what end of the stick you're
on. Well, that's true, but it's not always, as Mr. Varda can say, the town board meetings are not always pleasant. But in the end, the people are coming together and making reasonable decisions.
Thank you, Councilor.
Thank you, members of the court.
Mr. Varda.
Town board is the creature of the electorate. Mm-hmm. Ottmans have no access to that ballot box. No access to that ballot box. In the town's comprehensive plan, and they say they welcome. This is on page AA-142 of the appendix. They say they welcome farming like the Ottmans. In fact, there's a picture of the Ottmans Ag Building. Right next to it says, types of business desired by the town. Based on the comprehensive plan survey, town residents identified farm-based businesses and small home-based occupations as types of business they would like in the town. You know, they provided a survey, and the non-resident landowners were able to respond to that survey, but they were separated out. Now, you see who's making the decision here? It's not an electorate that includes the people that would like to build. The startup farm is the important thing. And my colleague tells you what the county does with the $10,500 income requirement now. But you'll have to go to the record, it's the court record number 15, referring to the town record number 54, which is Exhibit Q, which is the county's statement of the income requirement, and you'll find on the first page of that statement, it's a letter, it says, when you got a startup farm, I'm paraphrasing, when you got a startup farm, we will do an administrative review process. We'll look at it differently than saying you need 3 years of past income. So there is another proviso there. The startup farm is what the Ottmans are. The ordinance now, and this is an interesting issue in terms of the new county ordinance and the new town driveway and building permit ordinance, we're not going to count rental income is hostile to startups. And we have testimony in the record about, well, what if it was a startup dairy farm? What if it was a startup beef operation? What would it take? We had a beef farmer and a dairy farmer make their statements. Well, what is involved in that startup process? How many years does it take? That's not the intent of the zoning. And the intent is to avoid having to make the hard question, to say we need to have look at the evidence in the record, and is there substantial evidence? And the findings of fact, and I challenge you to look at the findings of fact by the town, I don't think you can find a pure finding of fact.
What should we do about that? That seems to be one of your main complaints, that they mesh findings and legal conclusions. So what can we give them as direction, a reviewing court, a circuit court, as to how to deal with it?
You can say that, and we're not giving a blanket presumption of correctness and validity. You can say we're going to differentiate depending upon what the finding is, what the conclusion of law is. And if you want an example, you know, it's sort of the findings of fact that aren't here. We have speculation in the record about what are true findings of fact. By example, in this case, the slope of the field road is less than 10% throughout its length. It already satisfies the driveway requirement. You can't find that in the town's findings. The existing field road already bisects the field. Appellate court made a whole lot of bisecting the field. It's already bisected. Look at the pictures. The pictures are in the appendix to see what the existing situation is. The field road is the equivalent of a driveway, a residential driveway. On page AA-126, you can see the path, the field road, up to the building site.
I saw that. So if they get the permit, what happens? Does it exactly stay the way it is? Does it get paved? Does it mean you can't move it without another permit? What's the effect of a permit?
It can stay the way it is. Now, there was some question about down in the right-of-way to the road, should they do something about how it connects with the road? And in its first draft decision, the town said, fine, that's something you got to do either way. Whether it's a field road or a driveway, there's some correction we want you to make here. That's it. They don't regulate the driveway, the field road, from the public right-of-way to the ag building. It is not regulated by the town.
Then what do you need a permit for?
You don't need a permit. Their jurisdiction over the field road is limited. And that's how you get down to what's really being regulated here. It's the fact that the road, the driveway, would go to a residence. It's the use of the property that determines what provisions of the ordinance apply. That is zoning.
Counselor, how wide? Mostly roadways are, what, about 60 feet wide? So about, and part of that is already probably blacktop for the town road. So are we talking about 20 feet of this field road has to be somehow modified to comply with the town's request?
I can't remember off the top. It's 66
not
feet,
okay.
And you got a 20-plus foot paved area.
Road.
I believe it's 66 feet.
Okay.
And the county would be like 100 feet for a county.
Okay. All right.
County road.
But if your clients get the driveway, the right to do the driveway, do you think then they have the right to build the home?
That's essentially the way the system works. It's you have to get the driveway permit. You don't even consider the building permit, but they work in tandem. If you satisfied the driveway requirement, you can probably satisfy the building permit requirement. There's much...
What about the 3 years and 10-5 and...
The county's rules at the time were not 3 years and 10-5 for a startup farm. The county says we will look at that administratively. Regardless of the testimony of Mr. Conrad at the hearing, the documents, the forms for applying to the county say if you're a startup, we'll take an administrative look at it. In other words, we're not going to necessarily require evidence of past production. We'll look at the other evidence.
And that's in the record?
That's in the record, and that's the reference I made to the record number 15. It's 54 in the town.
Exhibit Q.
You can find it. You got to go down. It's Exhibit Q. You know, another finding we don't have is about, you know, the soil type. The soil type close to the public road will grow Christmas trees more than twice as fast as the soils at Ottman's proposed building site. I have, in my living room, this year, it was open when I showed up,
That's the problem. You should have paid $6,000.
That's a little exception to the,
That would have been a good Christmas.
Okay, but let's look at it. It's in the second row next to Primrose Center Road. It's 8 feet tall. If it had been grown, planted on the building site where the Ottmans would like to have their residence, that tree would be somewhere between 3 and 4 feet tall. That's why soil type is important.
Didn't they have a test, though, if I recall the testimony here, that they did a sampling of the test and they made the finding that all of the property would have been conducive to growth? That's their finding.
That's like saying all soil is equal. That's the common sense assumption that the District 4 made. All soil is equal. It's not. You have to look at the soil. A long driveway may be less, take up less good farmland than a short driveway, depending on the type of soil over which it traverses and what you're doing.
That relates to the least impact analysis, right?
Case, it also relates to whether there is any adverse impact.
Okay.
How can you have adverse impact when the field is already bisected by the field road? The field road is essentially equivalent to the driveway. How can you find that using it for a residential driveway will have an adverse impact? You can't. You don't even work your way down in that analysis because there is no adverse impact. At least you can't have adverse impact, you know, less than zero. It's zero.
Thank you, Mr. Varda. Thank you, Mr. Reynolds, for this interesting discussion of field roads and driveways in the town of Primrose. This concludes our oral argument in 08-AP-3182, Steve Ottman versus Town of Primrose. Court will meet in closed conference at, if I'm reading that clock right, 3:15. 10 of 3.